Good evening. Welcome to the WBAI News. I'm Paul DiRienzo. We're still waiting on a final count to find out who is the president of the United States. We're going to talk about elections and vote counting. New York State, are we about to lose, are progressives about to lose the state Senate? We'll be hearing from a state senator on that issue. And the protests in New York and around the country, the real story behind the so-called spitting incident. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the WBAI News for Thursday, November 5th, 2020. New York City health officials have identified coronavirus outbreaks in two parts of Staten Island. Mayor Bill de Blasio said Thursday that two Staten Island zip codes, 10305 and 10314, have had a seven-day test positivity rate over 3%. The average citywide test positivity is currently at 1.8%. De Blasio says the city will increase testing in those neighborhoods. The mayor was asked if the outbreaks were related to opposition to mask wearing and other measures to control the outbreak.
In Sunset Park, we saw in Soundview, what we saw in Southeast Queens, certainly we wouldn't ascribe a political reality to that. I think it is the fatigue's a big factor. Again, just people needing to be reminded how important it is to wear masks and do social distancing. People needing to have testing made really readily available. When testing's made available and it's made simple, people really do engage it. So I think that's the essence of what we're dealing with here. There may be other factors. I think we've seen from time to time indications of other factors, more philosophical factors, but I don't think we can say that is the central problem here. I think we just need to go in, really let people know what's going on, give them the option to get tested, give out a lot of face masks, do the things that have worked before.
And as the mayor, the two latest concerning zip codes encompass the Staten Island neighborhoods of Orochar, Dongan Hills, and South Beach near the Verrazano Narrows Bridge and the western portion of the borough, including Bull's Head, New Springville, Heartland Village, and Castleton Corners. Meanwhile, in New York State, daily new infections have topped 2,000 for about a week after having plummeted to about 650 during the summer. As the United States marked another grim milestone, more than 100,000 new cases of COVID-19, a new single-day record. There have been more than 235,000 deaths in this country alone. And presidential vote counting continued in several battleground states where the contest is coming down to a rumble, pitting Trump supporters, echoing the president's claim of a stolen election, and pro-Biden protesters determined to count every vote. The president spent Thursday at the White House sowing doubt about the outcome of the race on Twitter, pushing baseless allegations of electoral fraud. His official statement was delivered in all capital letters. If you count the legal votes, I easily win the election. If you count the illegal and late votes, they can steal the election from us. Trump claimed victory in the election Tuesday night, while millions of votes were still being counted. For his part, Democratic challenger Joe Biden tweeted, "Be patient, folks. Votes are being counted, and we feel good about where we are." Trump's campaign filed a blizzard of lawsuits in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Georgia while requesting a recount in Wisconsin, where he's half a percentage point behind Biden. Biden has already won Michigan and Wisconsin. The contests in Georgia and Pennsylvania, along with Nevada and North Carolina, were tight with votes still being tabulated. The TV networks have been optimistic that mailed-in ballots counted later in the process and mostly from Democratic strongholds will eventually give the White House to Biden. But no election is over until the last vote is tabulated. Reporter Greg Palast wrote the book How Trump Stole 2020. He says the title might have been prophetic.
It's a prediction. It was a warning. If we don't deal with the issue of wiping out black voters, either blocking their vote, blocking them from voting, and young people as well, or purging the voter rolls en masse. So we do have a big problem here. And by the way, it ain't, the fat lady ain't sung. I'm very, very concerned about that. And right now we have a bunch of pollsters rending their shirts and crying, "Oh, we got it wrong again." So they said that Gore had won in Florida in 2000, that Kerry had won in Ohio in 2004, that Hillary Clinton had walked away at the election in Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania in 2016, and oh no, they got it wrong. Yeah, no, they didn't. People are giving honest answers about who they voted for or who they're going to vote for and if they're going to vote, but they don't know if their vote's been counted. And one of the big problems here is that the Democratic, so, you know, actually there was a blue wave, just the votes aren't getting counted, or voters are being blocked from voting, and that is not getting reported. There was a little mention on CNN, just throwing it out. Oh, 200,000 voters were illegally removed in Georgia. I can tell you, that's my report that I did for the ACLU, that 198,351 voters, we have their names, we have their addresses, we told the Secretary of State, you got it wrong, put these people back on the voter rolls. They weren't. Overwhelmingly voters of color were wiped out in Georgia. Now, Biden actually may still take, you can't steal all the votes all the time, by the way. You know,
if it's a landslide, right? If it's a landslide.
Yeah, so what's going to happen is, yeah, in truth, it's a landslide. And in truth, Georgia, which is a white minority state, should be totally blue.
And that's Pallas. He adds that in 2016, the Republicans were able to cancel more than 100,000 votes on petty challenges.
Are they really saying 141,000 forgery experts out there stole and signed someone's ballot? But no one complained. No one said my ballot was stolen. They didn't arrest a single person. No, but they did knock off 141,000 voters. And it's not random. If you're black, the chance your absentee ballot will not be counted, will be disqualified that you've sent in, is 300% higher than if you're white. They know where these ballots come from. It's not a secret ballot when it's mailed in.
And Pallas says he worries the same thing could be happening today, in particular Arizona, where despite the AP calling the state for Biden, most news media has been leaving the state out of Biden's delegate count.
Unless someone stops it, the ballots will all be, quote, counted. And when we say counted, they'll be doubled, but they could be disqualified. And what they want to do in Pennsylvania and in Arizona is go through signature verification, postage due, scotch tape on the ballots disqualifies in a lot of states, red pen instead of a blue or black pen.
Sharpies.
All these cockamamie things. So let me tell you, yeah, and Sharpies. You know, if you, you know, people don't realize that we lost about 2 million mail-in ballots back in 16 were not counted. So now multiply that by 4, and you will have, you know, you're talking like 7, 8 million ballots, which are not going to be counted that were mailed in. We have a tremendous loss of mail-in votes. They're going to challenge each one. So, for example, Paul, in Pennsylvania, they want to cut off the count of mail-in ballots. You know, and that's very much like what they did in Florida. And they also want to demand signature verification. Not every state goes through this crazy process of matching your signature from 20 years ago when you registered to vote to your current signature. And if there's a tiny change, they throw it out. It should only be thrown out if there's a forgery. But they want to go through each ballot and say, oh, they left off their middle initial, throw it out. Believe me, you can throw out, I'd say, a third of mail-in ballots could easily be thrown out if challenged, because you have to be perfect. You can't make a stray mark, use the wrong color pen, or like you say, a Sharpie. 100,000 ballots in Pennsylvania, 100,000 ballots are being challenged, and most of them will be thrown out because they are missing the inner sleeve. You have to have two envelopes when you send back your mail-in ballot, and about 100,000, it's estimated, were sent in without the second sleeve. They're called naked ballots. But these are citizens putting in, you know, voting. But if it were random, who cares? It's not random. They're attacking the mail-in balloting in Philadelphia, in Pittsburgh. Well, who's there? Who's in Philadelphia? It ain't Trump territory. So that's the gimmick, and it's racist because the targets are voters of color. We still have to deal with apartheid elections in America. That's the problem here.
And that is Greg Pallas, the author of How Trump Stole 2020. And the Associated Press says it continues to watch and analyze the vote count results from Arizona as they come in, adding, we'll follow the facts in all cases. And the story about Sharpies, a kind of marker pen. In the vote counting melee that followed on the heels of Election Day in the U.S., Democratic challenger Joe Biden's apparent unexpected narrow win in the state of Arizona was among the many results targeted by conspiracy theories. In that instance, the claim was that the use of Sharpie brand pens, which had been supposedly offered only to Republican voters in some precincts, had invalidated the ballots on which they were used. And the Snopes.com, which is the website that checks facts for journalists, has labeled that that rumor false. In New York, which gave Joe Biden nearly 60% of the vote on Tuesday, counting has been slow going. Despite the pace, some impressive firsts have been scored. Progressive Jamal Bowman cruised to victory in Elliot Engel's old seat in the Bronx, while Richie Torres, one of the first openly gay political candidates nominated in the Bronx, also won his seat. Meanwhile, in Albany, Democrats needed two more seats to gain a so-called supermajority on the state Senate, but according to the State Board of Elections website, they could lose four or five Senate seats, possibly more. But Senate Deputy Majority Leader Michael Janaris, who ran uncontested, says Democrats shouldn't lose hope because as the mail-in ballots roll in, he expects a better showing.
Watching unfold on our TV screens is happening faster than in New York because our boards of elections don't even start opening envelopes until next week. And so, yes, I do expect that what we're seeing in terms of Vice President Biden closing the gap and gaining votes every day, and now actually in the lead, is going to mimic itself here in New York, because we know, because Donald Trump was stupid enough to tell all his supporters not to vote by mail, that the mail votes are overwhelmingly Democratic. And as those get opened up, we're going to be making gains.
Why the so many stories today in the media where they were saying this is shows a conservative flush in the suburbs, that the progressives are losing their support in the suburbs?
Yeah, you're asking me to tell you why your colleagues are writing the stories there.
Yeah, I'm curious myself. Well, I don't. We're a progressive radio outlet that often doesn't share as much congeniality.
I'll take a stab at answering your question.
Sure.
We've had a lifetime of spending Wednesday mornings telling everybody what happened in an election. This is the first time in New York, at least, where the results will not be fully known for several days, if not a couple of weeks. And so I don't think the media or the public is in the habit of being patient like that about results. Everybody wants to throw their armchair analysis into the mix as soon as they can. But this is the equivalent of analyzing a baseball game in the seventh inning because one of the teams is ahead by one run. It just doesn't work like that. Let's take a breath. Let's wait for the results, and then we can decide who won and who lost and who gets the credit and who gets the blame. But this is all very, very premature. In fact, we told all our candidates in competitive races a month ago, prepare to be down on election night and make it up on the absentee ballots, because we saw the volume of absentee ballots there were. We saw how much they were skewing Democratic. So this is not at all unexpected.
How what do you explain? What explains the interest, the high turnout, the lines, the long lines, and that generated this turnout that's so hard to count that it takes a long time?
Donald Trump. Either love him or you hate him, and both sides are very fired up to express themselves. And fortunately, to the tune of about 4 million more people so far around the country, people wanted him out, and I think that's why they were happy to stand in line and happy to wait it out. We were at one of our early voting sites that had a long line a couple of weeks back, and one of the media there asked someone who was waiting, how long have you been waiting in line? Meaning, how long have you been waiting to vote? Meaning, how long have they been waiting in that line? And the person answered 4 years. And that's the sentiment that a lot of people shared, which is they just could not wait to correct the mistakes of 2016 and get a new president.
Are progressives going to keep their numbers in the state legislature and the Senate, or are they going to decline or add to them?
I'll tell you this. We'll, at a minimum, we will be in the ballpark of the same number we have now, plus or minus one. I do think on the upside, there's a chance if we run the table, the disputed elections still, that we can achieve a gain that would give us that supermajority that people were talking about. I don't know that that's likely, because we would have to, as I said, run the table across all the undecided elections still. But at a minimum, we will be ballpark where we are now, which would be status quo. And at a time when Congress has lost seats, the U.S. Senate did not take the majority, the Assembly here, our congressional delegation lost some seats, that would be a remarkable achievement for the Senate.
Are progressives losing the suburbs again, like in the days of Reagan?
No, I don't believe so. And again, I would caution everyone to wait until the results are in before we draw broad conclusions about anything. But I don't believe that's the case, and the results will bear that out, hopefully.
New York State Deputy Majority Leader Michael Janaris. Just a week ago, the media was speculating Democrats were just two seats away from their supermajority. That means two-thirds of the seats with a sitting Democratic governor and a two-third majority in the state assembly. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. The NYPD arrested 60 people on Wednesday night in a kettling operation aimed at least two separate protests. The protests were calling for all votes to be counted in the wake of Trump's premature claim of victory.
Count every vote. Count every vote. Count every vote. Count every vote. Count every vote.
The NYPD pointed to small fires as justification for the arrests. Kettling, where large groups of protesters are surrounded and then arrested, has come under fire by Human Rights Watch after hundreds were similarly arrested in the Bronx last June after the killing of George Floyd. Mayor Bill de Blasio had this to say.
Vast majority of people who protest peacefully, clearly. But what we have to do as a city and what the NYPD has to do is always de-escalate situations. That has to be the consistent approach. And that's what I expect. I'm not familiar with all the details of what happened last night. I will be talking it through with the police department leadership later and reviewing exactly what happened. But the crucial point here is that we obviously cannot allow violence. Let's be clear. Attacks on people, setting fires, attacks on officers, attacks on property. We just can't allow that, and we won't. But at the same time, the goal is always to de-escalate, and that's what is important to ensure in everything we do. So I have more to say as I review the specifics of last night.
A video posted to Twitter by a New York Post reporter showed a protester spitting in an officer's face before he tackles and arrests her. But Davina Singh, the 24-year-old in the video, says police instigated the ugly confrontation. According to a report in The Gothamist, she said she was walking on 7th Avenue when an officer with the Strategic Response Group rammed into her with his bike, causing her to fall to the ground. After she cursed and spit at them, she said police broke her arm in the course of arresting her. She received a desk appearance ticket for obstructing governmental administration after being released from the hospital in a cast. And in an unusual video tweeted by NYPD Chief of Detectives Rodney Harrison and now deleted, the NYPD says it's created a task force to investigate looting at city stores during the summer's George Floyd protests and identifying those who took part.
NYPD's newly formed looting task force is prepared to investigate any acts of looting that can potentially occur. The task force is equipped with the department's latest technology and video monitoring software to help them investigate these criminal acts thoroughly, help identify perpetrators, and bring them to justice.
Chief of Detectives Rodney Harrison in a video released by the NYPD. Mayor de Blasio defended the new task force, although he admitted there have been no looting incidents.
I've often used the phrase perfect storm. We've been through something this year that's unimaginable. I think because we're all in the middle of it, we've sort of somehow adapted to it, and it's become a little bit of a new normal to us. But what's going on this year is anything but normal. And so many problems got unleashed simultaneously. Those few days where we saw looting, we hadn't seen anything like that in a long time, and thank God we haven't seen anything like that since, and we do not intend to allow that going forward ever. So the idea is simply to learn what was available, the lessons available from what happened back in the late spring, and just know how we can move resources when needed very quickly to address a problem if we have it. It's just constantly learning from experience and improving the approach. I think that's the essence of what that strategy is about.
Mayor de Blasio, many New York City stores remain boarded up despite the lack of looting in the current wave of protests. And Jumaane Williams, the public advocate of New York, said in a statement, in part, after a summer of sustained protest, the administration and NYPD could have honestly acknowledged their failures in policing protests and acted in good faith to try to correct the disparate precedent set. Sadly, that did not occur, and the mayor still refuses to admit the reality of the aggression that the public has seen and experienced. What we've witnessed now are the disturbing results of the administration's opportunity missed, obligation ignored, and inability to provide the leadership needed at this moment. And again, that's Jumaane Williams. He's the public advocate for the city of New York. Why this quiet blue wave propelling Joe Biden into the White House, turning out 71 million votes for Joe Biden, a larger turnout than his former boss, President Barack Obama? Reverend Barber is the co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. He's president as well of the Repairers of the Breach Group. He claims the pain and passing of this COVID-19 pandemic and also its effects on low-income and poor individuals is pushing an unprecedented voter turnout from the South.
I'm saying, well, because the Senate may have stayed the same, and some are saying the politicians aren't going to do this. Let me tell you, don't forget, we're in the middle of a pandemic. People are hurting. We might not hear it right now because of the election, but people are dying, still dying, 1,000 a day, dying, 100,000 getting infected. And the people are not going to stand for that. They're not going to stand for a new administration. I don't care what their party is, not addressing these issues. So the politicians don't get to act on us because we're not going to merely be spectators. We are participants. So all the talking heads that are saying, oh, it's going to be this and they're going to do this, they're looking backwards. They're not looking forward. They're not looking at what the movement is going to do. People took time to vote. Now that they voted, when this comes in, people are going to be engaged because we're not going to let Congress people sit up in the United States Congress with health care and protection and living wages and people not have the same thing. Don't you forget, my brothers and sisters, that we are called to be a movement. Not just to be in an election, but to be a movement. But because you moved in this election, you are seeing in front of you the ending of the illusion, the beginnings of it, the very beginnings of a third reconstruction. And that's your work. Now we got to stay at it. We got to keep building fusing coalitions, keep building fusing coalitions. Even the closeness of the races in the South, if they don't turn out exactly like some would like, the closeness is a sign of the ending of the illusion. That's why we got to keep organizing, keep moving, keep fighting. And remember, we are not of those who shrink back unto destruction, but we are those who persevere unto the salvation of the soul. Faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. So my brothers and sisters in the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, and to all of you across the nation who are listening, we know the answer to the healing. Address poverty, address systemic racism, address ecological devastation, the war economy. And we may not end all of the divisions, but healing can come in this nation, because if justice comes, healing is present. If caring for the least of these, healing is present. And all may not come, but those who come and those who are healed will be far more than enough to keep pushing this nation in the right paths of justice and righteousness and love and truth.
Dr. William J. Barber, co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. And that's some of the news for Thursday, November 5th, 2020. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. From New York City for the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for listening.